if you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody. Good folks listening to RJ Hinder and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good-looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is, and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good-looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also... It also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard. Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or... you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-way radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. I want to talk a little bit about, well, it's an email. It's about faulty firearms. So here's the email. Hi, Bill. First off, I love your show, dude. Since about mid-2003, I've listened to Dave Champion shows, and that is how I learned about your show, and I think that I have heard them all. Great show. By the way, Dave Champion, 3 o'clock Central Time here on RBN. He says, the link below in this email is an article with good photos. It's at thefirearmsblog.com of a Springfield 40 caliber XDM that exploded. The frame blew apart. There's a response from Peter J. Knovels with an impressive list of credentials, and I would really like to hear your comments on this bit. He says, I've been practicing with one of these for about 6 months, mostly on weekends, which works out well, works out to well over 3,000 Federal American Eagle 165, 180 grain full metal jacket rounds through this thing. I cannot comment much on the accuracy of the Springfield XDM because I am not such a great shot, but otherwise, I thought this thing was a fairly decent mass production pistol. Do I need to worry about anything? Maybe an expert evaluation? Steve in Boise, Idaho. P.S. This might strike you weird, but have you heard of anyone oiling their firearm with super lube, with a super lube, like DuraLube for your car? I have a friend who soaks his 8K 1911 in this stuff overnight periodically. Now, after he shoots, he puts a 1911 in the dishwasher. It's been several years now, and he's still doing the same bit with the same pistol. I use a little on the slide of my XDM, and it's smooth as silk. Anyways, I thought you might enjoy hearing about that. So, Steve in Boise, a couple of things. First of all, when it comes to you're not exactly sure how accurate the gun is, a couple of things. First, come to the 2A Radio Handgun Course, March 19, 2021. All right? That will get you shooting just fine. On top of that, you don't need to shoot a bunch of ammo on the weekends to be good with a gun. The improvement, the getting better with a gun happens through dry practice. And you'll learn about how to dry practice and exercises to do at the same course. Live fire just merely confirms that all the good, solid, dry practice habits are improving you because you can see it downrange. When it comes to oiling, some of these super lubes like DuraLube, yeah, I've heard of people using those. I've never tried it. I don't have a problem. You just need to have some decent oil on there that is a high temperature, high friction oil. And anything that's made for a car engine, like a DuraLube, something like that, should work just fine. Now, for your buddy who soaks his 1911 in this overnight and who cleans his 1911 in the dishwasher, I've got to tell you, that is that's gun abuse. It really is. Now, he might just be happy with it. You know, great. If you actually soak the thing to where it's going to penetrate into all of the metals and then take it out and have to deal with this mess, yeah, as long as it's soaked in the metals, I guess you could potentially get away with putting an all-steel gun into the dishwasher. But still, I'm afraid of something potentially rusting. But if this stuff is penetrating in there, you're probably not going to have to worry about rust. That's a little extreme. That is not proper gun care. I doubt it gets into the lands and grooves of the barrel. I don't know about that. I don't know about stripping your gun down. Maybe. I don't know. I guess if you strip the whole thing down, strip the 1911 all the way down, put it in a basket, dropped it into a 5-gallon bucket of this stuff or something. I don't know. When you say he soaks it, I don't know if that means submerging or if he just sprays this DuraLube all over the thing and then lets it sit there on a paper towel or a chamois cloth or something. I just don't know. I would have to actually know a little bit more about what's going on here. But it sounds pretty weak to actually stick a gun in a dishwasher because all of the small parts that you occasionally need to take off of the gun to clean it, well, those aren't going to fit in anything but maybe a little bag. Then in the dishwasher, you're probably going to lose stuff. I don't know. It just doesn't sound right to me, man. Cleaning any gun in the dishwasher is not the way you're going about it. I looked at the pictures of this Springfield XD. Again, it's called thefirearmsblog.com. I'm sure you can find it on there. I have the link here. When looking at this gun, if you look, it's above the trigger and actually behind it a little bit. where the frame of this gun blew out. First of all, when it comes to the Springfield XD and the XDM, the XDs are an excellent gun. The XDM is an improvement over the standard XD in a number of small ways that all make for a very nice pistol. Especially if you get a decent drop-in trigger job on the deal. Because the triggers on the things, they're okay. But these drop-in ones actually make it similar to a 1911 trigger when it comes to the reset in the press. And the 1911 just has the best trigger that there is in the business. The thing I don't like about the XDs is they have that grip safety on the back of the stock, where you actually have to have that depressed to run the gun. The reason for that, years ago when John Browning put it on the 1911, he did not have it on his original 1909 design of the gun, but he did add it to the 1911 design of the gun because the Army said, look, when the cavalry's out on their horses jumping around and the gun falls out and it hits the ground, we don't want it to go off. So he developed a grip safety. We haven't been riding in cavalries for a while. If you do, you can still carry a 1911. So for XD to add that little feature on there, I'm not a fan. But anyhow, good gun. It is a very good gun. The XDs are good. The XDMs are good. I am looking at these photos, and I have seen several guns with my own eyes that have blown on the range. Having been around thousands of students every year for years on end, I have seen several guns blow out. Now, this one is especially a big blowout. This is undoubtedly caused by ammunition. Now, someone says that the suspected reason for the kaboom was that a round fired out of battery. All right? That a round fired out of battery. Or that would be called an open breech detonation. Now, as I look at this, one of the pictures shows the casing inside the chamber. Okay, now a little bit is poking out, but I mean it's poking out because there's a big kaboom, and the back end of it is blown off. Undoubtedly, this round was most likely, and we don't have enough information, but looking at this, most likely a hand load that was probably double charged. Easy to do with a handgun round. If you have a double charged handgun round, it's going to screw up the gun. It's going to blow it out, something like this. That is how the last three guns that I saw blow went. All three of them were Glocks. They all had the polymer frame, which is going to give before steel does. One, a guy brought his own Glock Model 17 to the range. And he brought hand loads. Now, the courses that were arranged said bring factory ammo. And there's actually an inspection process. We look at the gun, look at the ammo, make sure everything's cool. He brought a box of factory ammo. Oh, yeah, here, this is what I'm going to shoot. Then he stuck that ammo back in the car and grabbed his hand loads, his reloads, the stuff that we said do not bring, knowing you're not supposed to bring it because otherwise he would have brought that to the inspection table. So the guy's playing a little bit of hide the weenie when it comes to his ammo. So he takes these hand loads out to the range, loads up the gun, starts shooting. After a while, his gun blows out because he had a double-charged round. Well, luckily, his hand was nothing more than just stunned. He didn't have any, big injury or anything. So we end up grabbing a school gun. Sell him enough because the only factory ammo he admitted was the 50-round box that he brought. Sell him enough factory ammunition to finish the course with the school gun. What does he do? He puts the factory ammo in his car and starts putting his hand loads that already destroyed one $500 gun into a loaner $500 gun and promptly blows it up too. Now, what a moron, right? What a moron. Now, he's got the factory ammo to finish shooting the class. He's already out $500. Now he's out another $500 because he destroyed a school gun. Not 2 weeks later, some guy decides he's going to pick up ammunition, and he's picking it up out of a tactical simulator bay. Now, oftentimes, there's live rounds lying on the range because, you're doing malfunction clearances, you're practicing, and you just leave that ammo on the deck. This guy picks it up out of a simulator bay. We don't practice malfunctions in a simulator bay. If there's live ammo on the ground in a simulator bay, it's because it caused a problem. Well, no, he's walking out, picks up a couple of rounds, saves himself 50 cents in expense. Little does he know, these rounds were hand-loaded, and one of them blows up his Glock Model 21, full-size 45 ACP. Again, no permanent injury to the hand. It's stunned, it hurts. Freaks his wife out. Freaks his friends that are out. Oh my gosh, what happened? Your gun blew up, now we're afraid. And it turns out, because he picked up somebody else's ammo that was in a tactical simulator bay. So, don't shoot ammo that you don't know about. And to answer your question from here, Steve out of Boise, Idaho, is that gun safe? Yeah, the gun is safe. I wouldn't go washing it in a dishwasher. Your Duralube, I'm sure, is just fine. You just need to oil the right areas. Don't over-lube it. Submerging the thing overnight is over-lubing. All right, so be careful of that. The gun's just fine. This whole thing on these photos looks like it's ammunition-related. Factory ammo-related, I highly doubt. I have known a couple people who've worked for factories. Their ammunition loading is so tight, you'll almost never, ever see someone who used a factory round that blew out a gun. That's incredibly rare. I bet it was a hand load. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, so we discussed, I'm still kind of chuckling about a 1911 doused in oil and shot and then going through a dishwasher. I just, to each his own. All right, I have seen catastrophic failures of other types of guns, particularly in rifles. Now, in rifles, if you hand load, usually the way that it works in a rifle is you're not able to get a double charge. You might get too much in there and end up with a compression load, which could cause problems, and it has. So you need to be careful when you're hand loading, when you're reloading. You need to be very careful of this stuff. That's why you need to do this straight up. You know, you're not going to go have a couple of beers beforehand. You're not going to be loading with one of those six-pack cooler hats on top of your head and a straw going into your yap. Yeah, you're not going to be doing that kind of stuff. You need to get away from the distractions, you know, not have the dog, the kids, everybody else in and out of the room. You need to be focused when you do this, all right? When I have seen rifles that have had catastrophic failures, it's been one of two things, and it's pretty common for both. One is an incorrectly measured powder, or something with the powder is wrong. It might be a wrong measurement with the powder. It could be it's the wrong powder to begin with. It's overcharged. Whatever it is, you might have put a way too hot burning powder with way too heavy a bullet. There's different combinations. You need to get reloading manuals, be familiar with what you're doing. Now, I'll have to tell you, there are some things I have wanted to load. A particular bullet combination that there isn't any loading data out for, let's say, the powder that I'm using. Because right now, powder's hard to find. So if it says, look, you use this particular Vitavori power, and I don't have the Vitavori. Maybe I have the Hodgdon or vice versa, something like that. I don't want to have 19 different powders in my house. So what I do is I go on and I look at the burn rate tables. It'll show you the fastest burning powder all the way to the slowest. And there's, you know, 180, 200 powders out there. So if you find a powder which is listed for a particular bullet and find where it is, maybe it's number 43 on the list, and you happen to own number 45 or 46 or 40 or 41, well, you can pretty much use a very similar table for that. You just also have to make sure, like, if they're both a stick powder as opposed to a ball or a flake, you have to figure out those similarities. So there's a little bit of science involved in understanding. Now, anytime I've done that, it's always worked out. But I take a lot of time. I check my numbers. I recheck. I set it to the side. I come back a day or two or three later, and I'll start from scratch, and I'll do all of the numbers. I'll check. I'll recheck. I'll check again. Then I'll go find my old sheet, and I'll compare them. All right? If that works out, well, then I'll load up a couple of rounds, and I'll try it. And I'll be very careful when I test fire them. Like, one of the things is I wanted to have a 200 to 210 grain bullet, 308, that shot 1,000 feet per second or less. I wanted it subsonic for my suppressed 308. Well, you can buy those rounds, but nowhere could I find the load data. I had to look up all kinds of data for all kinds of different things and run all kinds of numbers. And I did it three times before I finally decided, all right, this is going to work. And it all worked out the same as to what I came up with the first time. I brewed up a concoction. It worked. That was great. So now I actually am able to load up a subsonic 308 round. The other thing that I see as a catastrophic failure with rifles, which undoubtedly happens a couple times a year at different ranges across the country, is when someone uses their laser bore sighter and they stick that thing in the barrel. They turn on the laser. Now, the laser bore sighter, it's a big unit that goes into the barrel of a gun. All right? Now, some of them actually just fit into the chamber like a normal bullet would. Others, it's a big rod that fits into the barrel of the gun. And it shines a laser downrange onto the target. And you get your sights, or in most cases a scope, lined up generally with the line of the bore on the line of sight. Usually people will do this if they just got a new scope and they're putting that on there. Or maybe it's a new base and rings or base ring scope combination, something like that. And then they'll use a laser bore sighter. And then people will load up a round to test fire this and neglect to take the laser bore sighter out of the bore. So this round hits this heavy seated object in the barrel, and the pressures come back and literally split the barrel open like a peeled banana. So those are the two major problems that I have ever seen with a rifle. I have never seen a catastrophic failure with a shotgun. And the only problems I have really seen with a submachine gun are open breech detonations on an open bolt gun, one that fires from the open bolt. That does, some people generically refer to it as a slam fire, where the bolt comes forward, picks up a round off the magazine, as soon as it's in the chamber, bang. So you press the trigger, it releases the bolt, picks up a round, shoots, and then it locks to the rear. So I've seen some open breech detonations on some Uzis and some Macs, but, you know, not that big a deal. Unless you're shooting left-handed, then it's going to blast into your face. More to come, guys. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. So when you think about European countries and you think about gun laws, you usually think, yeah, that's rough. A lot of European countries are very, very strict on guns. Some of them just say, no, you can't have them. And most of them, though, you can have a gun, but they're so incredibly restricted and highly regulated. And any time something happens, any crime is committed with the gun, they restrict these gun laws more and more. Now, in Israel, they did the opposite. When they were having the the schools were being attacked. What they ended up doing was they made a very unpopular decision at the time to arm everybody who worked at the school. All the teachers, the janitors, the support staff have armed guards there, military there, and arm all of them and teach them how to shoot. Well, they haven't had any attacks at any school since they implemented this back in the 70s. So they went the opposite way. Now, the one exception in Europe is Switzerland. Switzerland is a neutral country. Switzerland is also known for having excellent rifles, because every able-bodied male in the entire country, once they get to be 18 years old, I think is the age, 17, 18, 19, whatever it is, they have to go in for mandatory basic military training service. Then they take their rifles home with them, and they still go out and they practice, and they go to different practices and organizations throughout their life. Even when they're released from military duty, which is usually when they're about 40 years old, they're no longer mandated to have to participate, but if they're called up on, they still can. They get to keep that rifle. So essentially, when you're given the rifle, it's going to be yours for life. So here's just a little bit I want you to listen to. It's about 3 minutes on Switzerland guns and how things go in that country. Listen up.
This is a SIG 550. It's designed to destroy anything standing within its 400-meter trajectory. And there are over 500,000 of them kept in Swiss homes. Guns and shooting are a strong Swiss tradition. Basic military training is mandatory for young men, and afterwards, they're required to keep their weapon at home. Mark Heim is the Ticino representative for the lobby group ProTel.
Basically, this was my father's military rifle. And, of course, he got to keep it when he was finished. I have my grandfather's rifle in the office hanging on the wall. This was mine when I did service, which is quite an old one. It was introduced in 1957. Was used until 1990. And this is my son's. That's the current model. That's what's being used today. That's what we'll be using to shoot the Feldschießen today.
The Feldschießen, or Tiro Federale in Campania, as it's known in these parts, is an annual Swiss event, and it's also the largest shooting festival in the world. Roughly 200,000 people come out to target practice all across the country. Ammunition is provided by the government. Heim goes regularly to this range, and it's often a family affair.
It was organized by the government to have a very high state of readiness for the Swiss military and population. The target has always been that within 24 to 48 hours, Switzerland could mobilize a pretty large army, I mean, even by European standards.
But it wasn't the militia that sparked Heim's interest in guns as a young man. It was an unassuming trip to a Holocaust museum.
I was going through all the exhibits and the soap and the lampshades made of people's skin. And while I was looking, I heard a funny noise, and there was an old woman maybe 2 meters from me, and she was trying not to cry. She was sort of sobbing very quietly. She was holding it back. If she had been a few meters further away, I wouldn't have heard her. And she obviously had gone through that. That's when the whole impact of it hit me. And I promised myself I would never be in her situation. I would want to be free, never in a situation where somebody could, you know, march us off to ovens or prisons or just take away our freedom. The key to freedom is the ability to be able to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you are at the mercy of whoever wants to put you away. And the tools for that are guns.
Imagine that. You're talking about a free nation which is neutral. And the keys to keeping free and not being at the mercy of any dictator, anybody that wants it to come take control, is the citizens have guns. And in this case, they know how to use them. Not only do they know how to use them, but their national government sponsors annual shooting events and gives out the ammunition for them. Why? Well, the median family income in Switzerland is about $67,000. All right. Now, the Swiss form of government came in, the Swiss federal constitution that they have was in, I think, 1820-something, 1824. But they've actually existed in the similar form that they do now since the 13th century, since 1291. Okay? So that country's been around a while. They've had very independent thoughts. They've had generations of people saying, look, we're happy right here. We don't need a bunch of people getting in our business. We don't need to get in a bunch of other people's business. We're neutral, which is the way the United States was prior to World War I. We tried to be neutral. You know, trade with other countries and everything was fine. Sure, yeah, come vacation, do whatever you want to do. But when it comes down to it, this is our country. We're going to run it our way. We're going to make our own rules. And the population here is all of the same mindset. We've instilled that through hundreds of years. The education system is that way. The family system is that way. You know, that's just the way things are. And the way we ensure that and encourage it is to have the entire population able to come to active duty and actually defend this country. The Swiss don't get slapped around. They just don't. Could you imagine in this country if we had something similar? Yes, you know what? Let's resurrect the militia. Not only are we going to resurrect the militia, we're going to give you guns. If you want to sign up, you know, we're going to make sure you're not a criminal or a turd. And, you know, we're going to give you the guns. And we're going to have annual or semi-annual shooting events. We'll give you the ammunition for that. Keep these guns at home. If something goes down and you're called upon, we're going to expect you to be there. This is going to be your area of expertise. We'll give you training on that. Well, that would be pretty cool. I just have to say, that would be pretty cool. Now, people are of such a lazy, I guess just a lazy disposition and an entitlement disposition that I doubt you'd get anything like that in this country. It's like, well, what do I get out of it? What's in it for me? You know, when am I going to get mine? Well, have you done anything for yours yet? We say freedom isn't free. We say freedom is expensive. Freedom is costly. It's been expensive. It's been costly. But hardly anybody of this day and age is willing to get off their ass and lift a finger to do anything about preserving freedom in their life or during their entire lifetime. That's why I so applaud the people who are in the United States military right now. Because everybody who's in the military right now either signed up post 9/11 in wartime or, if nothing else, re-signed up. They were already in and they have decided to re-enlist. So it's an all-volunteer military where everybody has volunteered or elected to continue on in their military career during wartime. Now, those are the exceptions to the rules. I want to talk a little bit about gun enhancement crimes. Here's the idea of a gun enhancement crime. If you commit a crime with a gun, you will, in a lot of states that have these, a lot of different, I'll call them jurisdictions, because it might be a state, it might be a county, where if you commit a crime and you've got a gun, the enhancement, the crime is doubled. The penalty is doubled if convicted. Okay? So let's say you rob a bank with nothing more than a note to a bank teller. And let's say that that carries a 5-year penalty. If you rob a bank with a gun and there's the enhancement crime, you would be serving a 10-year penalty. I'm all for that. However, there are some gun enhancement laws regulations, whatever you want to call them, on the books around the country, which are not quite as specific. Mere possession of a gun while committing a crime can get you double the sentence. Let me give you an idea of this, and this is on the lower end, right? Let's say you're trespassing. Let's say that there is an abandoned factory, and you're trespassing for whatever reason. Maybe you're out scavenger hunting, right? You're looking around this old factory. Maybe you're looking for some, you know, copper tubing to take to the recycling center and make a couple bucks. And it's crappier. Let's say maybe you're in Detroit, all right, and you're going through an old Chrysler building, who knows what. And you're trespassing. They stop you. Okay, well, trespassing is a crime. If they happen to have an enhancement of possession of a firearm, then whatever that punishment is for trespassing, and let's say it's a $100 fine, would now be a $200 fine. Or maybe it would go from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor, or maybe a felony. The way that those sorts of things are written are absolutely unconstitutional. Absolutely. Because let me give you another example. Let's say that someone is found to be trespassing on the same piece of property. And when they're found by whoever the law enforcement is or whoever's looking around and finds this person trespassing, and while they find him, they happen to be on their knees praying, exercising their First Amendment right to freedom of religion. They're trespassing where they shouldn't be, and they're found praying. Is there an enhancement crime for trespassing while exercising a constitutional right? No. Now, let's say that you're carrying a gun, legal to carry a gun. You happen to be trespassing. You shouldn't be trespassing. But because you have a gun, now the gun wasn't used in the trespassing crime, but because you have a gun, now all of a sudden, this crime is enhanced because you are exercising a constitutional right to possess a gun. You see the difference between mere possession of a firearm when committing some sort of crime that you may or may not be aware of, and the difference of committing a felony and using a gun in the commission of this crime? Let's say somebody walks into a convenience store and we'll go back to the bank. They rob the bank, okay? We know that's against the law, and they have a gun on them, but they don't use the gun. In a lot of cases, in a lot of jurisdictions, the way that these laws or regulations are written, they will do double the time. Now, I'm not a fan of bank robbers. The point being, if they didn't actually use the gun, maybe once they leave, they've got the little battery pack or the ink dye pack, they find the guy, they've got a gun. Did you have this gun when you walked into the bank? Yeah, it was under my jacket. Okay, well, you know, you're just going to get double. Well, mere possession of a gun is different than the use of a gun. That'd be the same as going into the bank and robbing the bank, and when you're done, saying to the teller, "Praise the Lord, praise Jesus." Well, now you're exercising your First Amendment right, freedom of religion, and you're sharing it with them. Is there an enhancement crime for that? No, there's not. Here's my point, guys. Mere possession of a firearm, and you end up breaking a law that you may not be aware of. It might be something as simple as trespassing. Now, if you're breaking a law and you know you're breaking a law, you walk in and you write a note to a teller and say, "Give me the money," you know that's against the law. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about inadvertently breaking a law or an infraction of some kind. You may be completely unaware of this, or you do it and it was totally unintentional. It went down. You happen to have a gun on you. The gun was not used at any point in the breaking of this law or the infraction. And some prosecutor wants to give you an enhancement for possession of a gun. You need to find yourself one really good kick-ass gun crime attorney. And you need to attack this on a constitutional level. Say, look, if I was exercising my right to freedom of speech or freedom of religion, or I was a member of a press and writing a story at the time or collecting information, would there be an added sentence to this? Would it be doubled? No, of course not. So exercising my right to keep and bear arms wasn't used in this. I was completely unaware it was unintentional. But yet you want to enhance some penalty because I was exercising my constitutional right. The reason I bring this up, guys, is this sort of thing has been going on around the country with more and more regularity, especially in the anti-gun regions of the country. Okay? Illinois, California, New Jersey, some areas of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Some of these areas, people are getting hit with enhancement crimes for unintended infractions or breaking of the law for merely possessing a firearm that was not used in the commission of this crime. Fight these. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you won't run if this is not when you belong.
You know, I tell you, one of the traditional things that I always do on New Year's weekend is I go out and I go shooting, and I start the new year off right, exercising my rights and getting my training up to par where it belongs. And this weekend is the intention. My hand is getting better. All of the infection appears to be gone. I am taking some of the stuff from Michael Anthony on repairing the hand. The hand repairing is coming along. It's a little slower. There is a pretty reasonably severe injury to the ligament, or tendon rather, that goes from the wrist through the back of the hand into my index finger. And it's swollen, it's injured, it takes a bit to heal. Michael's stuff is certainly helping with that. I am getting more and more range of motion each day, and I'm just hoping that there's no pain involved. I intend to go shooting with my buddy Scott, I talk about every now and again on the show, this weekend. Go out and get some rifle training done, maybe do a little bit of shotgun, certainly some handgun stuff, and just take a few hours, celebrate the new year, and get some shooting in. So that's the way I'm going to do this. And it really, even if the weather kind of sucks, I usually go out and do this. Now, keep in mind, I live in the high desert. The weather's usually not too bad. It's not like back east when we're you got to shovel 6 feet worth of snow to try to get out to the range. That's not going to happen. But maybe do a little dry practice out in the garage or something, all right? But that's just one of the things that I do to try to reaffirm my independence, that I am not going to be someone else's slave. I am not going to go down under the behest of some government or some government official or somebody in my country. I'm the boss. The Constitution says so, and if you want to ignore it, that is at your own detriment. If you choose to be part of the federal government, or any government agency for that matter, and you choose to want to ignore the Constitution or ignore certain parts of it to try to better your position or give yourself a little bit more authority in this balance of things, I am here to tell you that I am not going to tolerate that sort of thing. And one of the ways that I reaffirm my mindset to that is, when a new year comes around, we're going to be celebrating a new year and a new decade coming up this weekend. I'm going to go out and start my appreciation for this country and the history of it by going out shooting with a buddy of mine. So that's the way I roll. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned for the Lendman News Hour, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show. Coming up next, have a great day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.